really want to thank RFK Jr. because he demonstrated something really important to understand. That, and you know, I interviewed him. I've called him a great American hero for his work exposing Fauci and COVID. You know, this was before Trump got elected this last time. What RFK Jr. has been able to demonstrate inadvertently is that there is no possible reform of our government, and certainly not of the FDA or the CDC or HHS, that even if you have a person that runs HHS, which is RFK Jr., even if that person knows that vaccines are dangerous, and even if they know that lots of elements of COVID were just a scam, even then, even if that person knows that vaccines cause autism, even then, the head of HHS can't make any lasting changes that reform the system. It's not possible from within the system. And that's a very important milestone. In a way, RFK Jr. has helped us reach the milestone where we can stop wasting time trying to figure out, oh, who should we send to Washington to represent us? Nobody's going to represent you in Washington. At least not in the two-party system, that's for sure. Because the system is so corrupt, it's so large, it's so broken, there is no reforming it. The only reform is collapse. And I've done podcasts on that very point before. The only reform is collapse. And in a way, you know, it's good news that that's where this is headed, because we all deserve a better system. You know, we deserve the America that our founding fathers envisioned for us. We don't have anything close to that right now. And the only way to get there is for the current corrupt system to collapse. Now, until that happens, sadly, this current system is going to do a lot of damage to a lot of Americans. And I want to be clear when I say that the FDA is a terrorist organization. The CDC is a bioterrorist organization. And we could go on and on, you know, from EPA, it's a chemical terrorist organization, etc. These federal agencies, they want to harm you. They are not out to protect you. They're not out to ensure the safety of anything, not of any drugs or vaccines or foods or farming practices or herbicides or anything. They want to harm you as much as possible. They really want you to just die. And their policies are designed to achieve that outcome on purpose. That's why the FDA attacks homeopathy and natural medicine and nutrition, while promoting dangerous, toxic, deadly vaccines and other Western medical interventions that do not work. But you see, in a way, they do work for their intended purpose. Their intended purpose is to cause harm to the American people. Their intended purpose is destruction and premature death, because that's what saves the government money. And also, the centers of power in Washington, D.C. tend to attract evil people. You know, power-hungry people, in some cases, Satanists, in some cases, just narcissists or evil people who just want to maximize their own greed at the expense of everybody else. And in fact, some of those people are in power right now. It's only going to get worse from here forward. So you should actually pray for the collapse of the dollar, because that's the only way we're ever going to have reform. The only way we get America back is through collapse, not through reform. And in many ways, this election of Trump, the most recent 2024 election, this was the last test to determine if reform was possible. Because here we had an outsider, or an alleged outsider, who claimed this entire time, you know, that he was going to change things from the inside. He was going to initiate a lot of reform, that he was the ultimate outsider. That's why the system opposed him for so long. And he got in, and then, you know, well, even before then, he joined up with RFK Jr. and many of us thought, oh gosh, this is like a dream team. We're going to have the guy who wrote the book exposing Fauci heading up HHS. And he's been the head of HHS. Rumors are he's about to resign. I'm talking about RFK Jr. But even before that, nothing much changed, did it? And it's not his fault. Ultimately, it's a structural problem, which is my whole point here. You can't reform it. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if they made me head of HHS. Even I couldn't reform it. The system is so broken, so corrupt, so evil, so satanic, nobody can change it from the inside. So until the collapse happens, I would imagine the instructions to the FDA, the CDC, are go out and cause as many deaths as possible, especially among elderly people, in order to save the government money on Social Security and Medicaid, things like that. So that's why they're pushing more flu shots. They're going to push new plandemics, no question about it. They're going to continue to push more prescription pharmaceuticals that kill people. They will continue to assault and suppress access to natural medicine, of course. Their job is the job of a terrorist, to maximize human casualties, to cause as many deaths as possible. And the people that work for the FDA, in my view, the ones that I've seen, love being terrorists. They love it. They love the power. They love the mission. They're all on board with the mission. I've never seen a good person work for the FDA or the CDC. And I've met a lot of scientists because, of course, I run and own a mass spec laboratory. So I've encountered a lot of scientists from private industry and academia and some former government. I've never encountered a good person who worked for the CDC or the FDA or the EPA or any of these organizations. In my experience, they are all evil and they're all totally focused on terrorizing the American people and maximizing casualties, cancer, deaths, and suffering among the American people. That is what they set out to do. When they wake up in the morning, they look in the mirror and they ask themselves, how can they kill Americans today? How many can they kill? How many can they poison? How do they accomplish that? What kind of natural cures should they attack and suppress today? What kind of small supplement company should they try to shut down? What kind of censorship should they push onto big tech? Who needs to be silenced today to protect their regime of terrorizing the American people? Those are the kind of people, in my experience, who work for federal agencies. They want you to die. And of course, they will use the power of the federal government to oppose anybody who opposes the mass death of the American people. So if you're teaching people how to farm organically, how to grow clean food, or if you're making nutritional supplements or superfoods or homeopathy, or if you're teaching people natural medicine principles, you know, about DMSO or ivermectin or colloidal silver or even the uses of chlorine dioxide, all these other things, you will be targeted, you will be silenced, you will be, you know, you'll have your reputation smeared, you'll be attacked in every way possible to shut you up so that they, the terrorists who run these federal agencies, can maximize their reach of terrorism. And so they can harm as many Americans as possible. That is their goal, period. And so the practical answer to this, what you need to do in your life to protect yourself from these terrorist agencies, is you have to nullify their reach over you as much as possible. How do you do that? Well, you practice the principles of decentralized living, principles that I teach every day. You can watch my show for free at decentralize.tv. You can download books for free at brightlearn.ai, or you can create your own books there for free. You can use my AI research engine, brightanswers.ai, also free, also very well informed on natural health and natural cures, natural medicine, self-reliance, survival, preparedness, you name it. It knows all that information, and it's free to use. Most importantly, You've got to get away from the products that the FDA wants you to use, prescription drugs. And you have to get away from the foods that the USDA and the EPA want you to eat because they're poison. Conventional foods that are laced with glyphosate and heavy metals and other pesticides and herbicides. They want you to eat those foods for the same reason they want you to take the jabs, because they are trying to kill you. So every time you say no to something that is called safe by a federal agency, you are nullifying their power over you, and you are protecting yourself from their reach, which is designed to be destructive, if not fatal. Think about all the people that you know who have already died, some from the COVID jabs, some from the cancer industry, etc. I'm willing to bet that in nearly every case, other than, let's say, accidents or what have you, but in nearly every case, the people you know who have died in the last 10 years, they all went along with the recommendations of the federal agencies. They went along with what the FDA said. Oh, this is safe. Take these jabs. Or the CDC, you know. Here, take more flu shots. Take more vaccines. And now they're dead. They're dead by design. They're dead because they followed what the federal agencies told them to do. And it was all designed on purpose to destroy them. And it achieved that. And yet, probably the people you know who ignore or who nullify these federal agencies, people who live in a more self-reliant fashion, grow more of their own food, make more of their own medicine, you know, don't go into the pharmacy every day for the latest prescription drug because their doctor pushed it on them. Those people are probably still alive and probably very healthy. It's obvious. It's cause and effect. So keep all this in mind. Remember, the federal government, all of its various agencies, they want you to die, and the Treasury wants you to be impoverished. They don't want you to get ahead. They don't want you to have wealth or be able to accumulate it. That's why they want you using dollars that they themselves are printing into oblivion on purpose. It's all on purpose. You think they want you to get ahead? You think they want you to be able to save enough money that you could stop working and stop paying taxes? No, not a chance. They want you enslaved. They want you impoverished. They want you diseased. And then they want you to die early so they don't have to support you with Social Security that you paid into all the years that you were working. Because the federal government is a criminal racket. It's a racket that steals from you while you're working, and then tries to kill you before you can collect any of the money that you contributed. That's how it operates. So get out of the centralized system as much as possible. One way you can do that, you know, you can take control over your life with solar power. You can get off the power grid, or at least partially, and have backup power. You know, our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, they have backup power systems. You know, solar generators, you can get the solar panels and the energy storage systems. You can find them at sat123.com. They also have satellite phones, of course, you know, backup communication systems that work even when the power grid goes down. You know, if you go to our site, rangerdeals.com, there I link to the specific companies that I recommend that I have conducted due diligence on, companies that have solutions that can help you live in a more decentralized manner. Companies like, you know, Goldbacks, offering gold as a spendable kind of currency, right? Or we have Battalion Metals, if you want the more traditional gold and silver coins. We've got Above Phone there, if you want de-Googled phones. We've got links to all kinds of companies that have great solutions for you, like VP.net, which has their secure email service that cannot spy on you, that doesn't even know who you are, that can't read your emails. It's literally impossible. I just interviewed one of the top guys there who explained why they can't read your emails. And they have a VPN service that they cannot even monitor what websites you're going to. They can't log. It's impossible for them to log. So they can't, you know, tattle on you to anybody. They can't turn over logs to anybody because they don't have any. They don't exist. It's even physically or logically impossible for them to log your activity. So find these companies. Again, rangerdeals.com. These solutions can help you live a more decentralized life and learn from what I'm teaching, which is decentralized living. You can find me at brightvideos.com. You can read my articles at naturalnews.com. And you can also catch my show, Decentralized TV, at that website, decentralized.tv. So check it out. Thank you for listening. Spread the word and spread freedom. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. To today's episode of Decentralized TV. Is your browsing activity private? Yeah, probably not. Do you use a VPN that you signed up for because an influencer told you that that VPN could be trusted? Well, it turns out that a lot of VPNs are actually owned by the same people who use it to find blackmail material on people. And so there's really only one VPN company that I recommend, and that's called VP.net. And they have some powerful new technology that makes their VPN even more bulletproof. And we'll be joined today by the chief marketing officer from that company to talk about it. But first, we're going to bring in my co-host, Todd Pittner. Welcome, Todd. And it's the human Mike. Todd, right? This is not your avatar today?
The avatar has left the building.
Okay.
With Elvis.
I'm going to ask you to prove it. Like, hold up three fingers, you know, something. I'm going to make you do a magic trick. You know,
I only have five fingers, Mike.
Okay. All right. You're human. All right. So Todd, do you use a VPN?
I do.
Okay. Okay. That's good. Cause you do a lot of nefarious browsing, I would assume. Huh?
You know what? Just don't look at my browser history and then I won't have to make you disappear.
Okay. Okay.
No,
you are a magician, by the way.
Yeah. I have the most boring browser history, I swear. It's all about interview prep.
And you're looking up our guests is what you're looking up. Yeah, because you do great research.
95% of the time.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and bring in our guest today because this is the first time that we're able to meet him and talk with him. But it's Chris Miller, the chief marketing officer with VP.net with some new tech. So welcome, Chris. It's great to have you on today.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. That is a very bright white background.
Yes, it is. Yeah, this is a new setup. We got to get something going on back there.
Okay, no, it's all fine. It's fine. It's not distracting at all. That's great. So tell us a little bit about VP.net for those who don't yet know about it and what you have new that we're going to talk about today.
For sure. Well, VP.net was started by a guy named Andrew Lee, and formerly he founded Private Internet Access, which was one of like the biggest VPNs out there. That started way back in 2010. So he was kind of out there before most of the big players are in the market right now. And I actually worked with him back then too. And he always had the same idea of building this VPN that like was impenetrable, that there was no way to like find any information on people. And, you know, we were one of the first ones that were brought into court multiple times and had to prove that we actually didn't log people. So, you know, we had the trust of people, but then we started seeing situations with other companies where they were being compelled to change their infrastructure, forced to log people. And we realized, you know, we're susceptible to that too. You know, like we use the same type of infrastructure. All the VPNs were basically using the same type of setup. So that was, you know, the idea right back then was like, we got to find a way to build a VPN that that's not possible. So, you know, this idea actually went way, way, way back to probably like 2015, 2016, and weren't able to build it at the time. The technology just wasn't there yet. So fast forward and you know, Andrew had figured out a way to actually do it, you know, after it sold PIA years later, figured out a way to do that using Intel SGX technology, where you can actually run the whole VPN inside these secure hardware enclaves you know, and this technology was actually designed specifically for the banking industry and for the legal industry, the medical industry, for like the most sensitive data possible. And, you know, the idea is that the CPU has a special hardware space inside it that no one else can access. Like even the operating system of the server can't see what's going on inside there. Only the CPU gets access to it, and the CPU encrypts it, and only the CPU has the keys to that encryption as well.
Wow.
So by running the whole, the VPN inside that, we can't even access it. So like,
so
it,
you know, does this require then special CPUs with virtualization technology or something like that?
Yeah, it's they're trusted execution environments. So it's using specifically, yep, Intel SGX is the one that we're using now, but you know, the technology we have, the patent extends to all of the different ones. So we're planning to add AMD SEV as well. So we have, you know, we're not dependent on any one type of manufacturer.
Okay.
But, so the idea,
So in other words, all the servers that your company has that are running this VPN, they have to run this virtualization protected environment to handle the VPN traffic. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's one of the challenges is that like there's a limited pool of servers to work with, and they're also a lot more expensive. So it's running a VPN this way is a lot more complicated. In addition to that, like, you know, the other VPNs, if something goes wrong, they have, you know, 10 different scripts and apps running inside the VPN that can tell them exactly what went wrong. We don't do any of that, and we can't possibly do that. The hardware doesn't allow for that. So if something goes wrong, like we have to actually figure it out the old school way and like sit there and keep tinkering with it and try to break it ourselves and try to replicate the issue. So the from the get-go, every single stage of doing it this way is much more complicated. And but it's the only way possible to actually guarantee that the customers are secure. Because, you know, the way our apps, every single time you connect, it verifies that the code on the server matches the code that we have published publicly, and anybody else can actually do this process themselves, and they can actually build the whole build themselves and verify the hash that everything matches to see that the code inside the enclave is exactly what we say it is. And if the app tries to connect and the code doesn't match, it just won't connect.
Wow.
So right now there's no way to possibly log, and the only way that anybody could make it log would be to actually change the code inside the enclave, which would instantly make every app stop connecting to it. So it's basically like a hardware level, you know, tamper-proof kill switch, so that if anybody, because that was the other issue, was that some of the, you know, the authorities would go right into a data center and work with the server that way, or you know, pull the server out and go dump the memory out of that. You know, and like a lot of VPNs, they use the whole, we use RAM-only servers, and they pretend like that actually keeps you safe. But the truth is, like, for over a decade, the authorities have had this a system where they go in, and it's a thing that clamps down right onto the power cable of the server, and it has six pins that cut right into the power cable into the right locations and immediately transfer power over into a UPS battery backup. So they can then unplug the server and take it to a secure location, and all of that data is still sitting in the RAM, and then they can dump the RAM and get all the information they want.
Wow.
And the VPNs have known this for years. They're just banking on the fact that you don't know that. So they, you know, you'll think that that actually keeps you safe. But again, if they do that to us, they still can't get into the enclave. So it doesn't matter. And then, you know, we took it a step further too, is that there's the whole architecture is a split architecture, so that the VPN accounts and then the actual VPN activity are perfectly and completely split and can never be correlated back to each other. So that way, even if in some amazing way they're able to break through the enclave, and then they're also able to break through WireGuard's, you know, post-quantum encryption, then they still won't be able to figure out what information goes to which user account. So, you know, that's the whole thing, is putting in multiple fail safes along the way, so that, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And that way, wherever they're coming in at you, they, you know, you're protected.
So this is a really hardened VPN at multiple layers, which you just described some of them. But, you know, I was thinking, Todd, a lot of VPNs don't even pretend to be secure. They log everything. They log everything. And then when they're subpoenaed by law enforcement, they just hand over the logs. I mean, there have been court cases like that.
Yeah, it's the digital equivalent of, you know, a good VPN, at least they close a bathroom door, and these other VPNs, they have a transparent door. They're like, says, come on in, you know?
Yeah. So Matt, and is, you know, it's not that, you know, we're not encouraging anybody to do anything illegal, but we're facing a time now in the United States. We just interviewed a Google whistleblower who said the U.S. government's probably going to outlaw access to open source AI models for Americans. So we're going to have to use VPNs to bypass the Great Wall of America to get to like Chinese models. You know what I mean? Yeah. How crazy is that?
Not VPNs, VP.nets, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there was actually a time in this country not too long ago where you could get deplatformed just for asking questions about certain health issues.
Really?
Yeah. You might know a thing or two about that.
I might know about that. Yeah, yeah. But tell me about that.
That's the thing. Like, you don't necessarily have to be a criminal for this to affect you. You know what I mean? People get censored all the time just for speaking out and telling the truth. You know what I mean? So if people can't speak the truth online, or people can't access things without having all of their information taken on them, then like, we don't really have a free internet anymore. And it's a huge problem for so many different reasons, you know, especially now with age verification laws, they're pushing on everybody all over the place and all these different laws where they just want to collect as much information as they can about everybody. And, you know, that all comes down to where are you located? So, you know, that's the core of what a VPN does, is say that you're located somewhere else. And like, sadly, we live in this age where your access to the internet is based on where you were born or where you happen to live right now. And it's, you know, even when you live in a quote free country, you still may not have free access to the internet because of which state you were born in, for example. You know, it's just a strange situation we're in.
Wow, Todd, you can see where this is going, right? I mean,
The
clampdown and the censorship that's getting even worse, even under this current administration.
Well, one thing, Chris, VP.net. That's very important. VP.net. To make sure our viewers, I want to talk to you about dissent and what it actually is. Mm-hmm. So I want you to educate our viewers. To make sure that our viewers, they don't hear censorship-proof VPN and think it means a VPN just wearing a fake mustache. Is the basic idea of dissent that dissent looks like normal web traffic, so censors can't block it without breaking a bunch of other normal websites. Is that the idea?
Yep, that's exactly it. You know, like most of these anti-censorship tools are based on trying to hide the traffic, which only works for a very short period of time. And then once they figure it out, they just block those IPs, which cost them literally nothing. But the problem is for the censorship tool, it costs them a lot to go get a new pool of IPs and to can constantly keep rotating them. So it's a losing game. There's no way to win that. If it costs you a lot and it costs them nothing, you're going to lose every single time. So we're like, what if we go the complete opposite direction? Instead of trying to hide, what if we're right out in the open, but we're mixed in with all of the other traffic? So, you know, right now we're using the Cloudflare infrastructure, which powers about 20% of the entire internet. And if you get into the top websites, like the top 10% of websites, it's over 30%. So, I mean, we're talking a lot of the most important websites in the world are using Cloudflare. And like, not only, you know, they can't block it because their own infrastructure is even using it. So, you know what I mean? In order to block that, you're blocking all of these different websites. So you're
basically saying, go ahead, bring it on, block us. But you're taking the mall, the bank, and grandma's recipe blog with you.
Exactly. Like this was actually, so there was something called domain fronting, which was a similar concept years ago that worked extremely, extremely well. And it was just basically using the CDN networks, but it was using a different technology, and it got blocked back then by Amazon Web Services and Google. But it was like the only really effective anti-censorship thing. So it's basically doing that thing without doing it in the way that was violating things and getting into trouble, and just using it through like the normal any cast servers. So it's functioning just like a website behind Cloudflare, just like any other site. So in order to effectively block that at the network level, you have to block 20% of the internet with it. But the important thing too is it's Cloudflare right now, but the technology is designed so that we can add in additional CDNs in the future. So eventually we could have multiple different CDN paths. So even if one location does actually block Cloudflare, then we can use a different one that, you know, like Akamai or something that's using another 30% of the internet. So eventually gets to the point they would have to block almost the entire internet in order to block it.
Yeah,
so
I was wondering if, sorry, Mike, I'll just book in this. I was wondering, you know, does relying on Cloudflare create a centralization problem? Because we, of course, have a decentralization audience. And what stops Cloudflare, Amazon, Fastly, and others from saying, nope, not on our infrastructure?
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely a risk. The first thing that you're speaking of is just using Cloudflare. Yeah, we outline that in our white paper, and that's definitely the first thing that needs to be addressed is having other providers available. There is, of course, the risk that they could potentially block us. The reason it's different than domain fronting is that we're using their service the way it's intended, essentially. So it's not using any tricks or workarounds to make it work. So we're not technically violating their terms of service. And, you know, right in the beginning of our white paper, we actually, you know, thank the CEO of Cloudflare for developing this type of infrastructure, because it does already on its own does allow parts of the internet to reach people that wouldn't ordinarily be able to reach it. So just on its own, Cloudflare is already in some ways a anti-censorship tool. Nice. And we're just sort of taking that benefit and extending that even further.
Excellent. Yeah, and let me second that, because even this website, decentralized.tv, is served through Cloudflare. Yep. And Cloudflare has never given us any kind of censorship hassles, which is really saying something. I think there may have been or two cases in history over the last 10 years, I don't know, involving like Nazi sites or illegal sites or something. I don't know the whole history, but they haven't messed with us, and we are usually one of the first to get censored off of any platform, right? So that's, but you know, we're good faith actors. We're pro humanity, pro truth, you know, pro freedom. So of course nobody should censor us, but they, you know, obviously Google and YouTube and whatever they still
do.
But what I want to ask Chris is that this technology, you call it Descent. I just want to understand, is Descent the name of the feature that is part of every VP.NET service, or is Descent separate product, or what is that?
It's actually a completely separate app that we have for all the platforms that VP.NET is available for, but it's not a separate account. It's for free for anybody who uses VP.NET, and you can log in using your VP.NET account. But the way it works is that your VP.NET account generates these blind signed tokens inside the Enclave, so it can authenticate the fact that you have paid or that you have an account, but it can't tell us Descent who you are or which account it is. So Descent can only tell that you're allowed to use it, and that's it. So that's the first thing. It separates it completely by doing it this way. So Descent has no way of knowing who the customer is that's actually using it. So that's the first step, which is, you know, actually adds a lot to the privacy side of things. You know, from there, it's ordinary TLS goes out to Cloudflare's edge, which, like, just the same one that's powering a fifth of the internet. And then from there, it goes out to a regional server egresses for using a token that is completely anonymized. So using a hybrid post-quantum encryption. And it's so that way, if in the future, if there are a post-quantum computer that's actually able to break through the encryption, there's still the second layer of encryption there. So if either one still exists, you're still protected. And again, that final server has no way of knowing even which Descent user was using it. And again, Descent has no way of knowing which VP.NET user it is. Okay. So the whole idea is it breaks the chain multiple times along the way. So each chain can't see further ahead or behind than the one chain before or ahead of it.
You know? I'm so glad you talked about that, because that's one of my important questions, is that we see advancements in quantum computing. We see, you know, 105 qubit systems from Google and Microsoft and whoever. But that's still far from the number of logical qubits that they would need to break the kind of encryption you're talking about. But I want to ask you about your second layer, because one of the concerns is that the NSA hoovers up all the packets and traffic right now, and then years later retroactively decrypts the stuff they hoovered up today. So you've already talked about this. How does your technology resist future decryption of today's packets?
Yeah, that the harvest now, decrypt later. That's the big concern, and that's why we've added like post-quantum encryption to everything that we do. And like right now we're using, it's X25519 MLChem 768. So it's really complicated, but it's the best that we have at this point, and it's considered to be quantum safe based on what we know at this point. So it's the best that we have currently today, and by any account that anybody out there thinks, it's most likely going to be safe through quantum computing. As time goes on and technology improves, we'll of course go on to that as well. But for right now, it's the best that you can have, essentially.
Did you see that Trump signed two executive orders about quantum computing. One of those is about defense against quantum shrinking.
Yep.
So yep. Are you confident that protocol you mentioned, which I'm not familiar with it, that it's very resistant in ways that even the White House is talking about are needed for military encryption and banking and things like that?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, it's the best that we have right now. It isn't currently the standard yet. There's actually like a whole fight going on about whether or not it should be the standard or not, which is, we actually have a guest coming on our show this Saturday to talk about that, who's part of the IETF list. But it's going to be, it's currently the strongest thing that we have out there. So as of right now, it's the best we have. And according to everybody that's looking at it, they believe that this is going to be strong and will hold against the harvest decrypt later kind of things that they have going on at this point. So
wow,
nobody knows what the future is, but as of right now, as far as anybody knows, this is the way to go.
Were you aware of that, Todd, that the NSA is hoovering up everything right now, hoping to decrypt it later?
So they're, if data was cocaine, they're snorting it all up their nose.
They're crackheads. Yeah. They're cokeheads.
Figure it out later.
That's for sure. Yeah. But I mean, you must have questions about crypto and, you know, traffic and VPNs, you know, using crypto through VPNs, things like that, right?
I do. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking, go for it, Todd.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, VPN Net's broader pitch is don't trust, verify, correct?
Yep.
But let's be honest, most people see open source and think, cool, someone else smarter than me is going to check into that, right? They're just going to presume. What can an ordinary user actually verify?
Yeah, well, the first is multiple layers. The first one, like I was saying, is every single time you connect, the app is going to verify that the server hasn't been tampered with, so that the server, you know, in that case, you still have to trust that, like, the server that the code that we've published publicly, you have to trust that somebody hasn't looked at that to notice that it hasn't changed or anything. But the app itself is going to verify that every time you connect. So as soon as you hit the button to connect, the app is going to verify, check the code on the server using attestation. It's going to verify that that code matches our public repository that anybody can look at and verify. So if it doesn't, it will refuse to connect. So that way, like, you don't have to be a tech guru to understand that. Literally, it won't connect and it'll tell you there's a problem here. So that's the thing, like, it will automatically raise a red flag to every single user. Secondly, you can click a button in the app and it'll open up to a verification page on the website that will show you all the information about the enclave. It'll tell you the name, the ID of the enclave. It'll tell you when it was launched, how long it's been online, and it will show you the cryptographic hash there as well. And then you can use that cryptographic hash to do, you can compile the enclave code yourself and then compare the hash to see that it's actually matches exactly. So there's three different, you know, there's multiple different stages depending on like your technical level, all the way up to like you can literally build a copy of our enclave yourself and prove that it matches the one that we're using.
So you can't log me if I'm using VP.net, right?
No, it's not possible.
And so let me ask you a broader question. Will prove you can't log me replace trust us, bro, we don't log you as the new privacy standard?
I mean, it should. Yeah. I mean, it's people have been using the same technology since like 2010 for VPN, and it's hard because it's surprising to me that like no one else has tried to move past that, really. Like, no, you know, everybody is still using the same thing. You know, like even Proton, I just saw an interview with the CEO of Proton, and like, you know, they're lauded all over the place as one of the best privacy companies, which is insane. But, you know, and he was still saying that like the reason why you should use us is because you can trust us. And I'm like,
right,
that's still the pitch? Like,
oh, I think that's great. That from the first interview, and people should go back. We did interview, goodness, Mike, you have a better memory than me.
Matt
Kim. Andy N.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My Matt Kim.
Yep. And it was a great interview. So that was that was at the point in time I'm like, okay, I need VP.net. So I really appreciate that. And I think people need to also really investigate VP.net and get it.
Well, let me mention, we have been, since we interviewed Matt Kim a while ago, Yeah, we are an affiliate of VP.net. It's the only VPN service that I personally recommend. So here it is. If you go to rangerdeals.com, it says VP.net. You have to scroll down a few rows here. You know, we have a few partners. And then you can just click on shop, and it takes you over to VP.net with our affiliate link. Gives us a little bit of credit here at the show. Although, you know, we're not sponsored by VP.net. We don't get paid anything, not even for this interview. We're not asking for that. We're just, I recommend this because it's, I believe it's the most trusted, most secure system that exists, period.
Right.
I mean, that's why. I want our audience to have their privacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. That's the funny thing. Like, you know, our whole goal from the beginning is to get people to not trust us. Which sounds weird, but like that's the whole is we're trying to change people's whole thinking on this and say, no, trust isn't good enough when it comes to your privacy. You need to be able to verify that they're actually doing what they say they can.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is by saying that, lots of people will tell us like, you're the only one we trust. And, you know, and I was like, that's the weirdest thing. We're telling you don't trust us. Why does everybody keep saying, but I thought about it. And like, you know, somebody keeps saying to you, trust me, you could trust me. It's cool. Like every time they say, trust me, like you trust them a little bit less. You're like, why do you keep saying, trust me, man? Like you're freaking me out. So it's like by saying the opposite of that, I think it's actually made people trust us more. And, you know, but again, like when you can actually check and see that yourself that like we're saying, we're doing what we say we're doing. Like, it's just a lot easier to trust somebody, you know?
Well, yeah. And but like, Chris, let me add this though, too. And you're free to comment on this, of course, but I've seen other VPN services offered at prices that are so low that I know they're run by the intelligence services. They're honeypot traps, and they're making the price really low, and they will pay like 50% payouts to their affiliates. So a lot of these influencers on YouTube are getting 50% for a product that's priced below its cost to function because it's hoovering up everybody's data. It's an intelligence operation to get blackmail material. It's like a digital Epstein files operation to get material on people. I mean, it's obvious. I mean,
it's actually worse than that. Like there are VPNs that will actually pay out $150 CPA for a single sale. And like the sale might be $50 or $100. So it's like you're losing money on every sign up. Like there's obviously something going on there, you know?
Yes.
And that's just the affiliate rate, you know, but it's
that's fishy. Well,
many VPNs sell privacy while collecting data, using trackers and relying on vague no log promises, right? And I mean, that's what I like about VP.net is you're saying, don't trust us, you know, verify, bring it. So what should people demand from every VPN provider before trusting them? If I mean, except just come to VP.net.
I mean, like, just give people a way to prove it. Like, you know, to build an infrastructure that is zero knowledge. Like if your infrastructure is built in a way that there is, it's at all possible to collect information and correlate it to a user, then even if you're not doing that, somebody else can. Either authorities can come in and compel you to do it or do it themselves by seizing the server at a data center, or a hacker can get in there and do it, you know, which is something that's happened before. There've been situations where hackers got into a VPN and released the logs of a quote, no logs VPN. And here was all the VPN activity of all of their users, you know?
Wow.
And like, that's the problem. If your privacy is quote protected by a policy, like it's not really protected. You know, and Proton Mail always said that we won't log your IP address. And then in like 2017, the French authorities came to them and said, we want you to log the IP address of this climate activist. So they just went to the website and deleted that line. And that was it. That was their notice to the world, is they just deleted that line of text off the website.
Wow.
And some people, once the case came out, people were like, hey, but your website says, wait, it used to say that. What happened? And they realized, you know, for months now, they may have been logging your IP address. And like, that was it. Your privacy was just protected by a line on a website that it was just one button to click and delete it, you know? So
your argument is don't trust the country, don't trust the company, verify the machine, right?
Yeah.
And the code. Yeah,
verify
the code.
Verify the code and make that it's doing what it says it's doing.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about payment for your service, because of course I never recommend that people use their own credit cards in their names to purchase VPN services. even though that's the most common method. And I don't even know what other payment options do you offer customers?
We do have options like cryptocurrency, a bunch of different options, and you can use gift card payments and things like that. What we want to add to it is our other company, Bmail, which is encrypted email. We have used the double blind voucher payment system for cryptocurrency. So like in that way, there's no possible way to ever verify it. So that's something that we're looking to add to VP.net as well and move that whole infrastructure.
Okay,
over,
wait,
so.
what's the URL for Bmail? Is it just like it sounds?
It's Bmail. .ag.
.ag.
Yep.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that because this is something we'd like to talk about. So,
sure.
You know, Proton Mail is very popular, but we don't know who's behind it exactly or what their policies are. You mentioned some of that. Tell us about Bmail.
Yeah.
So Bmail is basically just, you know, miles ahead of every other email service that's ever existed. Wow. So we used the similar technology, the Intel SGX technology, and we moved the entire SMTP pipeline into that. So when an email arrives, it arrives inside that encrypted enclave that we can't access. So we're the only VPN in the world where even if you get an email from a plain text email provider like Gmail, we can't even read that because it's arriving inside the secure enclave inside the encrypted memory. Uh-huh. So every other, like with Proton, for example, if you send an email to Gmail account or somebody with a Gmail account emails you, well, they have access to that in plain text. And like the other thing that they don't like to talk about is even if you're emailing an encrypted email to another encrypted provider, there's actually a plain text gap because it starts out encrypted with the sender's key, but the recipient can't read it. They have to have it encrypted with their key. But in order to do that, ProtonMail has to decrypt it with the sender key and then encrypt it with the receiver key. Wow. So there's that gap in the middle where your email is sitting there in plain text. And that's the problem. All the other encrypted email providers have that same problem and always have. And that's where it can get logged and get scanned. Like some of them use AI to look at your emails and things like that. Some do spam filtering, things like that. But I mean, essentially like and they call it end-to-end encrypted, but it's not. There's a moment where it's not actually encrypted. So I mean, that's the problem. A chain's only as strong as its weakest link. And if the weakest link is just a plain text email, then like your service is no better than the plain text email, you know?
That's mind boggling.
Wow. Now,
so ours, that's all happening inside the enclave. So just like them, we have to decrypt the email and then re-encrypt it. But that whole process is happening inside the enclave, which is encrypted by the CPU that we can't access. So even if the authorities are like, hey, give us that, like we can't. It's physically not possible. Nobody has access to that.
Wow. So what I'm on the website, bmail.ag. What is this B-I-M-I-L word?
Bimil is a Korean B-I-M-I-L. Word for secret.
Oh, that means secret.
So it's secret mail, basically.
Okay. I'm just not familiar with that term. Is that a common term in the privacy?
It's a Korean industry? Term. No. Andrew has a Korean heritage, so.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So okay. Bmail means secret?
No. Bimil. B-I-M-I-L.
Oh, B-I-M-I-L.
Okay. Yeah. Bmail is just sort of like a stylized version of that makes more sense to Western speakers.
Got it. And the .ag, what country is that? Where does
Antigua,
that come from?
I believe.
Where?
I believe it's Antigua.
Oh, Antigua. Okay. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm just curious. That's really interesting. Okay. So
what's really cool with Bmail is we have the option to do those double blind crypto voucher payments, but like, you know, my mom is never, ever going to do that. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people they're not going to get involved with crypto. That's too much for them. So they want to use like the easy option, which is Stripe, and have it automatically deducted from their credit card every month, which has the obvious problem of now it's connected to payment information. So what we've developed is this thing called the fake ID, which is essentially an alias that gets created using the double blind voucher system. So it basically creates a new completely anonymous email account that you can use that can't be connected back to your account, which means it can't be connected to any payment information. So even like if you're like literally it's just a couple buttons to click, you put in the email address you want to use and then create your account and that's it. So my mom can do that and can actually create an email account that has no connection to her payment information. Because like that's the way a lot of times these things happen. Like ProtonMail, you know, and just recently 2021, there was the Stop Cop City activists, and they handed over the IP addresses to somebody. I think it was that one. Or maybe, no, I'm sorry. That one was the payment information. I'm sorry. And that's the thing. Like, people will use a VPN or use an email program, and they just pay for it with the regular credit card. So there, it's already connected to your identity. So if there's any way for them to log or figure out anything, then they've got everything they need about you. So you said, we developed a way that you can create this hidden email alias that cannot be connected back to that payment information.
Okay, that's cool. Gosh, Todd, we haven't had fake IDs since, you know, high school, right? So, but on this then, you mentioned gift cards earlier. For a lot of people, that's a great way to make payments. You go buy a gift card with cash at a retailer, and then you can use a gift card. Can gift cards be used to pay for Bmail?
To be honest, I don't think that's set up on Bmail yet. No.
But it is set up on VP.net?
Yep. So that's another way you can go do it anonymously.
And what kind of, like, just common gift cards, like Best Buy and Walmart or whatever? Or what is it?
Yeah, there's a listing on the website. I can go in there and check them out. I don't know off the top of my head, but I know some of the most common ones are all in there.
I think it
changes over time.
What types of, crypto, do you support, like, Monero or privacy coins?
There's a bunch. To be honest, like, what surprised me is that the crypto payments haven't actually been very common, which was surprising to me. That is
surprising.
Yeah. For some reason, like, crypto hasn't been a big thing, but.
So most people just paying with credit cards?
Yeah. Most people, it's the convenience factor. They want it to be deducted. And, like, the thing with, like, VP.net is it doesn't really matter, because your user account and thus payment information is in a split architecture. It's completely separated from your VPN activity. So and then again, your VPN activity is all inside the enclave. So, like, it doesn't really matter.
You know? I see what you mean. Yeah. But
the only reason why it would matter is
a transaction record that a person
did buy
some service from you. By the way, in a related topic, I saw on Amazon.com, somebody is selling intermittent fasting food bars. So you can actually eat eat fasting bars now. So instead of fasting, you're eating, but they're called fasting bars. That, to me, that's like using a credit card to buy a VPN. You know what I mean? I mean, I hope that's not weird that I say that, because it seems like if you're privacy centric, you would not use a credit card to purchase any of
it. I mean, it depends. A lot of people have, like, different use cases and different reasons. Like, if you live in a country where you're not allowed to use a VPN, or you just using one can get you in trouble, then definitely don't. You don't use a credit card. You know what I mean? You want to hide that as much as you can. But if you're somewhere where, like, you're legally allowed to, and just having people know that you're using a VPN is not a concern to you or not a risk to you, then it doesn't really matter. As long as, like I said, it's a VPN that the activity itself can't be connected to the VPN, you know, to your user account.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. Different tiers. All right. Yeah. Wow. Well, by the way, in the interest of time here, I know you're on a tight schedule too. We're just about up on time here, for you. Todd, is there anything else you want to ask our guest?
Yeah. So are the authoritarian governments out there going to hate VP.net? And if so, isn't that just basically a 5-star review?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Oh, real quick, though, I got a few minutes on with Bmail. It's actually expanded a lot. It started out with just email. And then, of course, we wanted people to be able to encrypt their contact list as well, because, you know, you might not want people to know who you're talking to. And then we added a calendar too and made that encrypted as well. And it encrypts all of the metadata. And that's the thing with ProtonMail and a lot of these other ones, they don't encrypt the metadata on stuff. So, like, if you're trying to figure out if somebody was working with somebody and you can't read the email, but you can see that they wrote to that person on that day at that time, then you know that they were working with them. You know, like, you don't actually need the body of the email in that situation. Mm. So that's the thing. If you don't encrypt the metadata, you can piece together a lot about somebody's life just from knowing who they're talking to and when they're talking and how often. So all that stuff's encrypted because it's all in the enclave. But, you know, so we also do that with the calendar. All the metadata is encrypted for that, because a lot of them that don't. So if somebody can see all of the guests that are joining your meetings, the name of what the meeting is about, with the times and dates and stuff, like, that's that could be very potentially sensitive information that shouldn't get out. So all that gets encrypted as well. And now we just added Bmail Meet as well, which is video conferencing, video chat, like Google Meet or whatever.
Really?
That's all encrypted as well. Yeah, we just added that one like in the last couple of weeks. So,
whoa.
Is that also bmaileat.ag?
Yep. Or just bmail.ag. It's all included with the Bmail account.
Oh, wow.
And we have a we have a bundle too. Yeah.
Here's the five.
We have a bundle that gets you. Yeah, okay. Gets your VP.net, gets your Descent, gets your Bmail with Meet, calendar, email, all that.
So the
stuff.
Meeting, it's video conferencing like Zoom?
Yep.
Oh, yep. My gosh.
And I was like screen share, which what a really neat thing, the screen share, you can let just you or other people can have like a laser pointer, basically. So they get a colored dot so they can point out things on your screen share, or they can even use a pen and draw right on the screen that you're sharing, which is really cool. And then there's a whiteboard where people can like upload images, use text, draw things on there. So for collaborating with people, it's really cool. And there's like a pop-out window. So you can have the video chat open on one. You can have a chat screen open on another one. You can have the whiteboard open on another. You can even have two people sharing screens at the same time and switch back and forth between them or look at both of them at the same time. Like it's really built with a lot of collaboration in mind and being able to actually like get things done and as opposed to just talk to people.
That's so, amazing. Really cool. I'm going to take a deep dive into that, Mike, with all my
phone. Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very cool. I'm really glad you mentioned Bmail because I wasn't even aware of that service. So that's awesome.
And you can actually, you can get start out, you can get an account for free, but then you can upgrade and get 15 gigabytes of storage and you can add more storage later if you want to.
Wow. That's
let me ask one practical question. Like if you went to, you know, your grocery store and you got a Visa for cash, right? Mm-hmm. And you paid for the service, then obviously you don't have auto renewal with that, right?
Right.
So you probably pay for an annual subscription, and then you guys give plenty of notice to people prior to.
It shows in your account. People don't really like when you email them a lot, especially like privacy service. So we try to keep the emails to a minimum.
Yeah, I understand, but at the same time, like. We're all busy and I'm not really paying attention to, you know, when my subscription's going to expire. So I'd want to be informed so I could go to the grocery store and buy another gift card so that I could get my next year. So,
What Todd is asking is you don't just immediately shut off somebody's service if their subscription expires, right? Is there some kind of period where maybe they can still log in, but they can't send emails or something?
Well, like with Bmail, they go into like a waiting period. And if you're over the limit of storage for a free account, then like you won't be able to do anything until you bring the storage limit down below then. But it won't delete your account for like a pretty long time. I forget the amount, but it's a long time. If you start an account and you never pay for it, but you keep it below the storage limit, like you just use it for free indefinitely.
I'm thinking of heavy users though. Right. So people who will maximize what they can get from you, I'd probably fall into that category with my business. So I want to know when I have to go to the grocery store to get another gift card because I don't want to use a credit card for the service.
For sure. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think we were sent an email on that one, but that's something that we could take into consideration. I know it shows in the account screen where.
But is it like the account that I'm going to visit, like on to where I'm going to see when I go into wherever I go, my dashboard or what?
Yeah, it's just right in the settings. I mean, and again, like it's not like you're going to log in one day and we're going to be like, you're dead to us. Like there'll be, you know, a grace period to give you a chance to take care of it. So
okay.
we don't want to like lock anybody out of their life, you know, nothing like that.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
But you'll need to go, Todd, you need to go buy another like Visa card for cash.
Right. Exactly.
Every year or whatever, right. Whatever yeah. it is, whatever yeah. time.
Yeah. I think I'll just put it in my calendar.
Yeah, your encrypted calendar.
My encrypted calendar, right.
Yeah. All right. Well, perfect. I'm glad we found out about this. That's really cool. And I love how you're making it as convenient as possible because people get stuck when it becomes too complicated, right?
Yeah.
And it's the convenience. I still can't believe how many people use Gmail. And I yell at them, like, don't even send me email from Gmail because you're creating a link. So stop it. And I actually tell everybody I will not open any email from Gmail, period. And yet people still send me Gmail because they're like, well, it's the one I've always used. Is that, well, find a new way. to use email.
Did you see recently Proton like announced some new app, a connector where you can connect your Gmail account to your Proton mail account?
I was like, why would you want to do that?
Have you completely lost the plot?
Yeah.
Their whole business started out on don't use Google. And now you're
right.
Connecting to Google.
Okay. Yeah, let me ask one last question here. Cause I'm being practical. So if I get Bmail and it comes with Bmail meeting and all of that, is there an app for my phone to where, okay. So if I open that up, I'll have my calendar in there. Right. So, yep. Okay. I just want to make sure.
This is one of my favorite things about it. So like Google, cool. They have all these services. Like I want to use my calendar. Okay. Well, let me find my calendar app. Okay. Now I need my mail. Well, let me go find my mail app. Oh, now I need to do a meet. Now let me go find my Gmail. It's one app. Everything is all in there. And you can switch between the apps while you're in a meeting and still keep talking to people. So you can like go check your email in the same window and even have a pop out like a picture in picture window of the meeting while you're doing that. So you can still keep working while you're in the video chat and not miss a beat.
And please tell me that by saying an app, it's not just dedicated to desktop. It can be on my phone.
Yep. We got iOS and Android already.
Okay. I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yep, exactly. All right. Me too. That's awesome. All right. Well, Chris, keep us posted. You know, of course,
absolutely.
We're strong advocates of your tech and we love our audience to find new ways to protect their privacy. So keep us posted. And if there's anything that we can share with our audience, let us know. And you're also welcome to come back and share it here. Or you could even come back with a demonstration
that would be great.
A share screen and you could show people how to use things.
Absolutely. Okay. There's one thing, if you don't mind, if anybody's like interested in like the encryption that's actually powering the internet, we have this show Saturday at Hide and Speak we're doing on YouTube that we have Daniel J. Bernstein, who I call the godfather of modern encryption. He invented basically all of the encryption that powers our services, WireGuard, Signal, iOS, like Linux, like basically the internet, SSL, like HTTPS websites. He's the guy that like designed those encryption protocols. Wow. He's an absolute genius.
Let's get him on, Mike.
Yeah, and he's basically in a war right now with the standards group, the IETF mailing list, who decides which encryptions that we use and which standards get put forth. And basically, it's his belief that the NSA is offering large contracts to the people on that list to get them to advocate for the weaker encryption protocols to make those the standards to make all of us less secure, so it's then easier for the NSA to get control of our data. So he's basically fighting these people, and they've been like, they banned him at one point. They gave him like a timeout essentially in the list, and they're fighting him. And they literally changed the rules to say that asking too many questions or asking for evidence of something is rules for getting banned from the list. And again, like this is the man who built the encryption that's keeping us all safe. Like as they're sitting there arguing with him, they are currently being protected by the protocols that he invented. And you know, I mean, it's just wild.
Where do we find that on YouTube that we can go watch?
Just on our YouTube channel. It's our name is VPNet underscore official.
Okay.
And it's this Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern.
All right. We'll check that out. And, if you don't mind, pass along the word that we'd love to interview him as well.
Absolutely.
At a later date after you do. But that sounds really fascinating. So yeah, we'll put on the screen about your YouTube channel and keep us posted if there's anything that we can share for you, other services or announcements, things like that.
We'll do.
Okay.
Again, thanks so much for having me. It's great talking to you.
Yeah,
great
you too. Thanks for joining us.
Really learned a lot.
Fascinating. Okay. Have a great day. And thank you so much.
Yep.
Cheers.
All right. That's Chris Miller, everybody, from VP.net. And of course, Todd and I will be back after this break. There's Todd again. We'll be right back after this break with the after party discussion today. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Cheers.
Join the official discussion channel for this show on Telegram at t.me/decentralizedTV, where you can ask questions or offer suggestions of who we should interview next. Also, be sure to subscribe to the email newsletter on decentralized.tv, where you'll be alerted about one day in advance of each new upcoming episode before it gets published. On decentralized.tv, you'll also find links to our video channels and social media channels across all platforms, including Brighteon, Rumble, BitChute, Twitter, Truth Social, and more. Check it all out at decentralized.tv.
All right, welcome to the after party, everybody. And Todd, can you stand by for just 1 minute? Because I have to finish a message on my high security word processor. Are you ready?
Are you going through VP.net?
Okay, there we go. Oops, I jammed it up. I actually did jam it up. Okay. wow. Old school, but high security, Todd.
Nobody's logging that.
Nobody's monitoring that.
Yeah.
And I can take this piece of paper and I can just put it somewhere where nobody can see it. Nobody can find it, right?
Yeah.
There we go. That is called security. And, you know, carbon, you can do a carbon copy. I mean, this is the way the world used to be, way more secure with this kind of technology, obviously.
Isn't that funny? We've come such a long way, but really, have we?
Yeah. Oh, and this thing doesn't need batteries, and it also doesn't need any electricity at all. I mean,
that's correct.
It's literally human powered.
Yeah.
It's just,
and when you're done, you can go outside and ride your bike and play with your friends. Just going in the Wayback Machine, right?
Oh.
when those existed, life was just simpler.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. I get it. And this is a Royal Brand typewriter. I don't know. It looks like it's from the 19...
Where did you get that?
Well, interestingly, this has actually been in my family for a while. Yeah, I inherited this.
That's cool.
From, I don't know, a couple of generations ago. So I think this is from the early 1960s or the late 1950s.
How cool.
Yeah, kind of cool. But you know how I love old technology anyway.
I do.
And yeah. This one, by the way, doesn't catch on fire from a power supply blowing up.
Right.
That's the advantage. Here I've got, you've seen this, you know, the old Soviet manual hand cranked calculation machine.
Yeah.
That does multiplication and division and everything. And also, it does powers of 10 through this, if I could get this thing to move. Here's the hand crank on it right here. You actually crank the answers in, you know? So, and then with a typewriter and this old calculator, I tell you, when there's a solar flare, Todd, I'm all set. I can still
you
do
are.
The computing
and speaking of hand cranking, I want to put you on the spot.
Okay.
You have a little cube next to you that I'd like you to crank and just make it mixed up and then show people how you don't need electricity to solve it, Mike.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I am. Everybody, Mike is really, really good at Rubik's Cubes. And he was playing with this before the interview and he solved it in like a minute. But so I'm putting you on the spot, Mike.
Okay, I'm not going to do a full solve, but I will show you something. Some of my favorite patterns. So go ahead and tilt it back down to the cube. So here it is solved. One of the patterns on the top is the T. Oops. So that swaps these yellow cubes in a T pattern have all been mixed up. This one down here and these. And then once you recognize this pattern, you want to solve it, you just do the same pattern again. And then that's solved. See that?
Wow.
Yeah. So there's also, there's a pattern I call Superman, which is kind of interesting.
Patterns do you know?
Well,
or
have, I don't know, 60 something patterns, wow. I guess. Here's one. So this is kind of like a, I don't know, which camera am I looking at? There's a single yellow one here. And then a four square here, and these sides look like this. So that pattern is solvable like this. And then, boom, all the yellows on top. And then this is a L pattern. It's kind of hard to show here, but just this L shape of the yellow is bad. So that pattern, that's like a right-handed L. Oh, sorry, I messed it up. Because I'm standing. I'm standing in an awkward way.
But everybody should know that that's wisdom plus discernment and no electricity to solve that.
It's definitely no electricity. Yeah. But, you know, I almost, a few years ago, I almost severed my index finger.
I remember.
And this was a rehab method for cubing, was to be able to, you know, to work the finger and do all these patterns. And then over time, you just start memorizing more and more of the different patterns and recognition and so on. And, but some of the solving is not patterns. It's just logic and recognition.
Yeah.
Second layer stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. I skip that class. I skip that class. So my brain doesn't do the Rubik's thing, but.
You could, if you wanted to spend a lot of time and learn it, you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just like learning the food forest stuff, you know?
That's true.
You could do it. It's all
achievable. This is not going to mean anything to you. You're going to say, oh, get out your violin, Todd. But I'm telling you, here in Tampa, Florida this week, it has been between 100 and 105.
Oh, wow.
All week. And I've spent a fair amount of time, at least in the morning, in the food forest. And it is so hot. You just cannot believe it. It is just miserable. But, you know, sometimes you got to get out there, Mike, you know?
Well, and there's so much healing benefit from being in the food forest. And
oh, yeah.
And not just the light waves and the sights and sounds, but all of the smells of the grass and the soil and the trees and the plants.
Yeah.
And you get to visit your raccoons.
Yeah, that's in the evening. So they come out and party around. Usually when now it's almost like 8 o'clock PM before I go out there, because it has to be shady back there for them to come lay down and say, all right, dude, who feeds us? When are you coming? You know,
wow.
which reminds me, after this recording, I got to go get them a bunch of, you know, grapes, and they like a certain cookie, not chocolate chip, but oatmeal and raisin. So I buy it in bulk.
Wait a minute. So it sounds like they've got you trained.
They have me trained really, really well. And the deer too. The deer now, I go back there what happens is I'll go back there and I'll call Rocky, because they're all Rockies to me. And they'll come out and they literally come up to my leg, and they're like little dogs that try to come up my leg. And so I'll start feeding them and stuff. And then that's the test that, you know, the Bambis and Buckies use to make sure that, you know, I'm not going to kill them or something. But the second they start feeding and they're like, ah, that's our guy, then they come out now, and then I'll spread corn to them. And it just works. But our guy, Chris Miller, man, we learned a lot today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't wait to go to bmail.ag. I'm serious. It's just like,
yeah. No, I think I'll sign up and try it out too. Just see how it goes. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll kid test DTV, approve it, and then maybe we can have him back on. But I intend to incorporate it into my. I want to see how it might work integrating with the, you know, unincorporated nonprofit association communications.
Sure.
And also he really has me intrigued because I use Zoom to be able to talk to people. So that's why I was interested in the video conferencing, because if that is entirely private, I would rather have something that would be entirely private to be able to have these conversations. So we're going to give it a good shot, Mike.
No, I think that's great. This can serve you well and all of your clients for the UNA,
yep,
you know, or
that's right.
all the customers who get that. Let me bring that up, by the way, since you mentioned that, my575e.com, right?
Yep. It is the unincorporated nonprofit association. It's a specific California established one. This is an entity that has been around for 75 years. created by California legislators for California legislators. And when Nelson Rockefeller talked about own nothing, control everything, he was talking about entities like these. This one just happens to be the easy button. And by easy button, meaning it's not complicated, but if you are a W-2 earner, a 1099 earner, if you operate an LLC, man, if you operate a business in an LLC, you definitely want to learn more about this, because we're doing some amazing things with people with businesses that are fairly complicated and complex, and we're helping them make these bulletproof to where they keep so much more of what they earn, they protect so much more of what they have, and they decrease their personal liability tremendously. Or if you own property, you trade in crypto, if you stack precious metals, you have kids, worried about your progeny, and this is a generational entity. And I just encourage people to go to my575e.com, click on Let's Go, enter your email and name, and then you get to the next page, which is a 90-minute video interview of Dennis Gray. He is the subject matter expert in this. He's 83 years old, and he's been doing this for 40 years, helping people for 40 years. And I've had my own UNA for 8 years, Mike. You know that?
Oh, yeah.
And it was been so good to me that I approached you when we first started the show. And you being Mike Adams, of course, we're like, you know, I know nothing about it, but I'm going to become an expert at it and learn from it. So, you did your due diligence and came back with a thumbs up. And since then, gosh, it's been a little less than 3 years, Mike, but, we're now at 700 people that I've helped acquire these with. We have a private Telegram group of, 600 people, and that's where all the support is. And it's just such an amazing organic community, Mike, because they all came through our show. And if you're watching Decentralized TV, or Mike Adams, you know, you just think differently than the rest of the world. And those are the type of people that are in the community. So I just invite people to learn about it through the site. And if you have any additional questions, like many people do, just simply book a private consultation with me. It's really simple. It is $150, but as everybody knows, you get that back if you move forward with the UNA. It's just that when I didn't charge anything, people didn't show up for the Zoom meeting. So that remedied that. But most people, Mike, when they do book a consultation, they move forward, because I tend to be able to answer a lot of questions and plant a lot of seeds of discovery to where people are like, ah, wow, why? Where was this 20 years ago?
Exactly.
It was there. You just didn't know about it.
All right. Very cool. That's my575e.com. And while you were talking, I went ahead and solved the cube. And I want to show you something that it's kind of a really cool move, which is the center. You see the center move?
Yep.
That's a move that only like advanced cubers do, or speed cubers. Like normal people trying to solve a cube won't even try this. And you do it with your ring finger. But wow. there are patterns that use it. Like, watch this. So what that does is it reverses these sides on the top.
Okay.
It swaps these two and these two. You see how that looks now?
Yep.
So it, if you had solved the cube to this point and you're like, oh my God, the blue is on the green and the green should be over there. How do I do that? And the answer is just this.
You use your middle finger?
There you go. You use your ring finger.
Oh, your ring finger.
And it's back. See?
Yeah.
So a lot of these movements are, you know, very non-intuitive.
And which one of your fingers did you almost cut off?
The index, the trigger finger. The
index. Okay. So
yeah.
So
not even really using that for this move.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But you found it helpful during your rehab. Right, using the cube?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of the other patterns use it a lot.
Right.
Yeah. But like here, take a look at this pattern. This, can you show? Yeah. This is a really common one, and it ends up with a dot in the center, and then a wall on this side, two here and two here. And yeah, sure. The solution to get all the yellows back on top is this. This is actually a really common move.
Yep, you can do that. Then that. Yep.
And then boom, you're back. So. I knew that. So what? What cubers like me do, we'll sit around, like, if I'm in a meeting,
if I'm in some boring meeting and what I'm doing is cube solves during the entire meeting, you know, like I'm joining by audio and the person's like, are you listening? Yeah, I'm listening, but I'm actually solving the cube like 50 times during the meeting. You know, so that's okay. What we do.
So you say you're solving a cube. You have the same cube. You solve it 50 times. So then what do? Just like put it behind your back and mix it up and stuff so that you don't know, you know, its order. So you can resolve it.
No, you can, it's pretty easy to do random orders. You can just like play around with it. Like I just created this other pattern here, which is this one corner and then these three.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see that. And then when you discover the patterns, you know, each one is a different, it leads to a different top pattern. And then that's a solution for that one. So, but it's really easy to just mix up randomly. You don't really know what you're doing. You're just
right,
you know, messing around and doing things. But there's also drills like this. I'm actually doing the same movement over and over again right here. And it's not even using most of the cube. It's just using part of the cube over and over again.
Now that's kind of a fancy schmancy cube, right?
It's just a really high speed cube with magnets in it. So yeah, that's okay. Yeah. But it is much better than a standard cube in terms of trying to do things quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's
very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. It's also what's funny is it's their large cube, and Todd, it's literally 1 millimeter larger than the standard. It's only
no kidding.
It's one. This is 56 millimeters. And then they came out with a large version, which is 57 millimeters.
That's ridiculous.
And I'm like, look at these hands. I need like 70 millimeters, you know? I mean, come on.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a CMO who was stoned, I think.
It's like, we're going to add 1 millimeter to this cube. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I was thinking about today's interview with Chris and VPNs and nut tracking and all of that. And I was thinking, could you imagine a couple of stoners watching today's interview, Mike? And one gets real serious and says, bro, do you think that there will ever be a VPN so private that even the user doesn't know what they're doing, bro?
It's so private, you can't log in.
Yeah. You can't, exactly. You just don't know where you're going or where you've been. I don't know.
And then the other guy's like, that's my life every day.
Don't do drugs, people. You know? Don't do drugs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Mike, if don't trust, verify became a dating slogan, do you think civilization would improve?
Yeah, what's shocking to me is how many people would give up privacy just for convenience. You know, I mentioned Gmail.
Almost
everybody.
Most, right.
They just hand over all their information constantly.
Yeah.
Even, you know, to a hospital, to a doctor, to an insurance company. Like, everybody asks for it, you know?
Right.
Like, I was at the dentist a couple of months ago. It was like, oh, here's a sheet. We need your social security number. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't need my social. Yeah. You need my teeth, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you need me to bring my mouth. I brought my mouth and I'm paying cash. You don't need my social security number. What for?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. I remember when I tried to chop off my finger when I was getting that bunch of bananas with the machete.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I had to rush to the urgent care, which they booted me out of there. So I had to drive to a ER, right? An actual hospital, so that they could do a different kind of having a mental
stitching
break?
Like stitching up,
not the stitching, the x-ray.
Oh, okay.
And I'll never forget when I went there, and of course I'm just kind of out of my mind, right? I've been losing a lot of blood, and it had been like 2.5 hours since I'd sliced it open. And when I went into admissions, they said just casually, they're like, sir, just put your hand in that machine. They wanted a freaking hand print. There was like, you literally could put your fingers, spread your fingers and put it in. And I went like this, kind of Pavlovian to do it. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? You don't need that. Yeah. Why do you need that? Why do you need biometrics? But
yeah,
I mean, people out there watching this, they'll know if you go to a hospital or you go into anywhere these days, they're trying to get you to put your your hand in. That really? Is not just, yeah.
Hell no. That's a scene out of Idiocracy. Put your arm in the machine.
Right.
Remember that? Like, yes, this particular individual needs, it lacks an ID or whatever. And that's how he got the name. What was the name that he came up with? No. What was that from Idiocracy?
I can't remember. It's been so long.
No, it was not something. That was his name. Not sure. That was it.
Not sure.
Because he said, do you want to use a machine or something? He's like, not sure. And so they gave him the name Not Sure. And then they printed a barcode on his arm, and then the machine let go of his arm. Dude, that's a scene right out of Idiocracy.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Did they ask you to put one tube in your butt and one tube in your mouth, and then did they mix those up? Because that's also from Idiocracy. Just wondering.
Oh, man. Yeah, I must have been distracted watching that movie because I don't remember that.
Okay, you have to go back and rewatch that, at least the hospital scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking during the interview, I think we've arrived at a point where we need to determine what's scarier, Mike, right? Your browser history, your metadata, or your smart fridge judging your midnight decisions.
Oh, man. We are headed for such a dystopian sci-fi civilization here where everything is surveilled. These flock cameras all over the place.
Oh, horrible. They're
going up everywhere.
Yeah.
For what? To spy on you, on your vehicle, you're walking around, spying on you, your license plate, getting all your traffic patterns.
Yeah.
I mean, it's starting to feel like a giant Stanford prison experiment or something here.
Oh, my goodness.
You know?
And here's something that doesn't have anything to do with decentralization, except... No, it's really more centralized annoyance. But what about, maybe you don't, you live on a ranch, so you don't probably see this, but people watching this will be, you know, in suburbia. These freaking electric bikes that every kid has now, they don't ride normal bikes anywhere. They have these bikes that are very powerful and they jump curves. They go on the sidewalks. They get in front of your car and everything. They're like little ants out there now.
Oh,
and
really?
Man, I don't know. There has to be so many kids that are getting hurt because they're like little evil Knievels doing their wheelies down the road and stuff. I mean, I would have loved them. You would have loved them when we were young. So I don't judge, but I'm telling you, man, they're legally, there needs to be something to done with them because there's just, it's anarchy right now on the road. Idiocracy on the road.
The typical HOA won't let you have a food forest, but
exactly
they'll have like young Mad Max anarchy on the streets.
Exactly, Mike. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I'm getting to the point to where I'm going to start throwing food papayas at them. You know,
man, don't forget they know where you live. So
I know
you don't want to be the old like get off my lawn guy in the neighborhood.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. Last night at midnight, I walked my puppy and I went out and there was literally a gang of kids out there. I mean, on the corner, calling each other the N-word, you know, just like laughing and talking and everything. And I walked out and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to walk you down there. And I went back in and I got my German Shepherd and I took him for a walk.
Well, you know, Todd, sooner or later, you know, you have the mindset of a person who won't live in a neighborhood forever.
Believe me,
you know,
believe me. Yeah. But yes, I hear you.
You need your own place because number one, you could have a bigger food forest. Like you need acres.
And
then secondly, all the animals that you have befriended, you know, right now, they're not necessarily safe in that area because another neighbor could call the animal, control or whatever.
And they have.
Oh, they have.
Yeah. I got a knock on the door from a little ranger who's like, you know, dude, you've been reported.
Reported?
You're feeding raccoons. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm feeding raccoons? I said, you know, and I, when it happened, it was like,
you're a criminal or something for feed.
Yeah. He was saying, we don't feed we don't feed alligators in Florida. We don't feed raccoons. And I said, I just told him, I said, look, there was a mama out there with two baby raccoons, and then there was no more mama. And so I went out there and I fed the raccoons some grapes and some oatmeal cookies and stuff, just because they had no mama and they were hanging out back there. What would you do? I said, like, just who the heck has the time to be able to report that? I mean, this is just ridiculous. And I said, and I'm also spreading deer corn. And this guy was really cool, though. He said, well, sir, you can spread deer corn. That's fine. And maybe you want to put the, if maybe you wanted to put some grapes and break up the cookies and put it in your deer corn and then spread the deer corn, you can do that. So he was trying to be cool, right? He wasn't a D-I-T-K.
But, you know, you're running up against the edge of insanity of neighborhoods. You know,
well, yeah, you're right. I mean, literally last night, you know, last night concerned me because it's like midnight. I'm like, there are literally a dozen kids out here at midnight, and we live in a gated community, you know? And I'm like, but these are the kids that lived in the community that have grown up.
Yeah.
And now they're older and they have friends. And so their friends now are coming over and they're just like, realizing that they can stroll at midnight and stuff. And it just, so yeah, you're right. I need a ranch, Mike.
You need a ranch. Yeah. No HOA rules, no neighbors playing like, you know, neighborhood Nazi cop.
And then here's the thing. I know this guy who can teach me how to decentralize my solar when I buy that property. Yeah, right.
Totally.
And maybe this guy knows some people we could talk to about the future of batteries and
it's exactly what we're doing here in the studio. Yep. I'm going to be bringing you some really cool stuff in the weeks ahead and months ahead. We've also got some amazing interviews coming up involving industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be very, very cool.
Yeah.
But you know, what you find out when you live in a neighborhood is that your neighbors are insane.
They're insane.
They're batshit crazy. And they're also very common. I mean, they are the majority.
Right.
And everything they believe is fake. They wash their clothes in cancer-causing chemicals.
Yep.
You know, they spray all kinds of cancer-causing chemicals on their lawns, and then they wonder why they got cancer.
Yeah.
You know? And then they get mad at you for growing anti-cancer herbs like dandelions in your lawn.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to get out sooner or later.
Yeah.
You can take the raccoons with you, just like capture them all and take them like luggage.
Let's launch the Todd's Ranch GoFundMe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And by the way, next time the animal control dude shows up, says, have you been feeding the raccoons? Just say, no, Avatar fed the raccoons.
Right.
That wasn't me. That was a mirage. We're doing holographic projection technology.
Yeah. I have a UNA. I own nothing, control everything. but I don't own those cookies, you know?
No.
So it wasn't me, you know, it was this entity. I'm stretching.
No, that's fine. That's totally fine.
We're in the after party.
Also, if you were to take a stroll in your yard, and if you tripped and fell down and like cookies fell out of your pockets, that's not your fault.
Very good point.
Yeah, I was strolling. I tripped over the dandelions. And when I tripped, the cookies and grapes just spilled out all over the place. And by that time, I was like, well, it's too late.
I get it. And then now I understand why you don't feed them, because they came out of the woods.
Yeah,
they were going into my pockets.
That's right.
They looted me. One of them stole my credit card. I think he's getting some bourbon down at the corner.
Yeah, he signed up for some accounts online. He's getting Amazon deliveries.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Right. Grapes and cookies to the back property.
Totally. The dude hired an Uber the other day. Took a trip across town to, you know, terrorize a chicken.
Oh, goodness. So, All right, Mike. Well, look, we have we've done it again.
Yes, yes. And by the way, I also inadvertently feed the raccoons occasionally. Over the years, they get a chicken. But that hasn't happened for a long time because of my dogs that run patrol, which is really great. So yeah. I try not to feed the raccoons because they want to eat all my chickens.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, if we have Vitalis back on, you know, he would say, well, Todd, let me come visit your back property. And then there would be no more raccoons. Oh, remember that?
Oh, Daniel. Oh,
Daniel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he would have a raccoon cuisine recipe to share.
Oh, he did. He shared that in one of our interviews.
Yes. Yes.
He's like
raccoon fritters or whatever. The
raccoon is really good.
Oh man.
I remember him saying that.
Oh, no, thank you. Like, that's all right.
No, thank you.
I'm not. Okay. Enough. Enough of that. All right. Well, look, that's the episode for today. I want to encourage everybody to visit decentralize.tv and just enjoy all the other episodes. I want to remind people that we have a new subset of episodes called Down the Rabbit Hole.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So that's a separate set, and we're going to talk about those later. We've already run one of those, which is Randall Carlson, and we've got some more coming up.
Yeah. And it's going to expand our guest list too, because we are dedicated. This program is dedicated to helping people with decentralized living strategies. And sometimes we'll have a guest on to where it may not fit that perfectly, but the guest was awesome. But do we not publish it on DTV? And that's where Down the Rabbit Hole was born, to where we're like, no, let's create a subcategory of DTV. And I think people will really appreciate that. But there's some guardrails on it, which is it doesn't mean that it's going to help you decentralize your life. And it doesn't mean that you and I actually agree with the guest on certain things. But it's also going to open up the possibilities of some really interesting guests, because we don't have to be handcuffed with just decentralized guests. It's just going to be fun.
Hold that thought. I need you to say that again, because you and I need to record that intro also. So let's actually wrap this up right here, right now.
Okay.
We have to have an intro for Down the Rabbit Hole.
Good.
So we'll do that next, since you just brought it up. All right. Anyway,
okay.
Everybody, thanks for watching today. This is today's episode. Check out all the other episodes at decentralized.tv. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
Okay.
Feeling run down? Groovy Bee NAC capsules support your body's natural detox process by boosting glutathione, your master antioxidant. Clean, plant-based, and lab-verified. Shop now at healthrangerstore.com.